Welcome to the Spa Girls Podcast, the self-publishing podcast for extra special authors. I'm just throwing that on there. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing, and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J.
And our introduction is like a box of chocolates.
Never know what you're going to get. Which kind of is appropriate for
right, so appropriate
for today. So it's just the four of us. Not just. And we're very excited to be here for another Spa Girls podcast. And we're going to talk about mistakes we've made.
Which may surprise you to know, because we sort of are so professional. It's very rare that we make mistakes, right? I mean, you know, they're going to struggle with it.
Maybe I should have told people to sit down before I said that, so that they didn't like fall over in shock.
Maybe.
So the part of it is like we're not just talking about mistakes so we can mock ourselves, although that is part of it, but part
and
of
each other
and each other, yeah, obviously, how you deal with those mistakes and how you move on from them so that you don't kind of sit there in a curled up ball and
rocking
to yourself, playing the shame and blame game. So we're going to do some personal examples and how what happened and how we dealt with it and what we did. And some of it's got silver linings and some of them don't, and that's just the way it goes. So who wants to start?
Thanks, not.
All right, I'll go with mine.
Yay,
I'll
go with mine. Cheryl.
So, well, I say it like I just hit one. and the first truth is that you are going to make mistakes, and you're going to make more than one.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there have been a few, but this one really sucked as far as I was concerned, is that I don't know if you've heard of Goodreads giveaway, but basically there's two levels and you can pay to give away your new release, usually a new release. And in my case, it was 100 ebooks. And so you pay a price and it's $99. It's gone up to $119. That's US. And they let everybody in Goodreads join this giveaway. And you want to get as many as you can, because what they'll do is they'll add their book to their to-be-read list and they'll get notification as soon as the book comes out. And they go into one of these books. But actually, you're going to get probably 1,000 people at least signing up for them, which was my experience. And so what I did was I had the dates for that, and I have done them before. I had the dates for this one, and that it would sort of come out at the same time as the new release and therefore push up my rankings in Amazon. What actually happened was I got the dates wrong, and they received their free copy, those 100 people, of a placeholder book. So when you sign up for Goodreads, you actually have to have a book loaded to Amazon. So it's not published, but you actually have to have a book filed in Amazon. And I had, you know, a decent copy, but it hadn't been edited. It hadn't gone to my ARC readers. And so I got a few complaints because they got the book that was not the final copy. And I was absolutely mortified. Like, my heart sunk, and I'm sure you can all cringe along with me imagining that experience, because I am quite particular. And it wasn't something that I could fix. I could not take back those books and give them a new book. So what I did do was I went into Goodreads, and as people were putting up reviews, and one of them was quite scathing about the fact that this book had X's in for names, Wendy.
Yeah. Well,
a few of those,
part, right?
A few of those.
Yeah.
No, but you'll appreciate it. And I went straight back to these people via Goodreads, and it's one of the things that you don't really do a lot. You don't really reply to a lot of people in Goodreads, but this was my mess up, for want of a better word. And so I contacted this person and a few others that had not been as scathing, but had said, oh, something's happened here, blah, 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 and offered them the free book, and also put it on my blog on Goodreads that anybody could contact me and I would send them the book. And I wouldn't know if they all had one or not. I would just send it because I didn't care. I just wanted to fix it. And out of that, I got some really good feedback and some, you know, very positive that I was trying to fix it and they understood that, and mistakes happen and blah, blah, blah. And for people to say that, it does make you feel better.
Yeah.
Because you know that mistakes happen. You don't want them to be your mistakes ever, ever, ever. And, so didn't have a silver lining as such, but that was the best possible way I could have dealt with it.
I owned it.
Yeah.
So how did you go about contacting them?
Through Goodreads. So they would leave a review.
Mm-hmm.
And make comments on that review.
So you could actually make a public
comment. You can reply. But I also did a public thing on my blog and apologising and saying that anybody could contact me and left an email address and that sort of thing. So they didn't have to go hunting for it.
And I think it's important to note that this is not Cher's first rodeo. And, and you know, like she made a mistake, and you do. And we all make mistakes constantly, right? Yeah. You know? And I think that's important to point out.
Nobody is.
And Cher is a real I dotter and T crosser. She gets stuff right.
I think the one thing, a big deal for her. Yeah, but I think the one thing you know is when something like that happens, you will not let that happen again.
No.
Because you basically threw away money and created a bit of bad feeling for some readers' experiences. And you don't want that as an author. You never want that as an author. But to try and fix something, that is your only option. Ignoring it, I don't really think.
Doesn't go away.
Not in that case anyway. You might have another idea about it.
But I think personally for this, that this when you make a mistake, you obviously don't want to make the mistake, but once you've made the mistake, it's actually an opportunity to create what I would think this is where you can get some super fans in there, right? You create someone who's got this experience with you, whereas they can see you've made a mistake. You come to them and say, look, it was a terrible mistake. Here it is. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to go above and beyond to try and make this better for you. And you have an interaction with them. So A, they see you as a real person. Mm-hmm. And B, they go away and say, oh, that Cheryl Fitz, she was awesome. She was so lovely. Mm-hmm. She sorted it out for me. There was no problem. She was, you know, and then when they see your name again next time, instead of being this random author that they maybe didn't even start the book off, they're like, oh, it's this, you know, she's that lovely person who helped me out. I'm going to give her next book a try. Like, you know, there's
fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. But it works for cafes, right? You go into a cafe, you get bad service, something happens. Mm. Is it the cafe where they kind of treat you like nothing and they don't do anything about it and they don't, or is it the cafe where they bend over backwards to help you out and give you another meal or fix whatever the problem was? Is
that just apologising profusely?
Yeah, just do something.
Yeah. And human error is human error, right? That's just that's who we are. We're not machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what about you, Trudels? What have you done?
So many things. As have we all, yeah. Well, the one that came to my mind, first of all, was my delightful habit of going back and re-editing things, which Wendy is going to give me crap for, I'm sure.
No, not at all.
No. And I've done it a few times, and I did it with my last series, the Demon series. And I don't necessarily regret going back and fixing things and doing what I did. I got an edit on it, and I feel like I've learned a lot about writing and editing and my processes, and I'm happy with the product that I've got, and I'm really excited to be moving forward now. When I think about the time that I've spent going back and redoing those books and how many books I could have written going forward, I kind of think actually maybe it could have been the better idea just to keep moving forward and keep writing new books and keep figuring things out as I did. And maybe I could have gotten a manuscript assessment on the next book and done it with a new book and new books putting out rather than getting assessments on old books. It's just because I love those books and they just didn't sell as well and I couldn't understand why.
Do you think what you've done will change that?
No, and this is an interesting thing. I think they're better books and I think they're much deeper and
but girthier.
I like them a lot better. But I'm not sure that because it's just the I just don't think I hit the right kind of trope in that maybe. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I haven't started advertising them again, so I can't tell you officially. But I just think so part of me is happy that I did it because I do feel more confident in those books and I know that I've done as much as I can to them to make them better books and I think I'm a better writer for it and there's a lot of positives that come out of it, but I can see quite clearly that I would have had like three or four new books that it would have been written and I could have made those books better and been doing the same sort of things for new books rather than old books. So I don't know. I'm still a bit.
It was your was your process, right? I mean, while I gave you a bit of shtike about it for the continual rewriting, I can see that your passion for those books is you wanted them to be the best product you could be.
And actually it was weighing on you.
Yeah.
And now it's done, it's over, and you might have a little regret for not having published new stuff, but that is taken care of. I think that's, you know, you put in a put a tick beside it, and if that makes you happy, then that can't be a bad thing.
So it's sort of one of those things where I'm kind of like so I don't
however, if I see that manuscript open on your computer again, there will be trouble. Okay,
you have been
just
told.
So you have been told. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you about my mistakes. So I'm going to talk about writing yourself into a corner. So many years ago, I had an agent and I was published with Random House. And I decided to write a three-book series and pitched it. And absolutely foolishly, I had it so that the Sinclairs and the Ravens, who were either the hero or the heroine in the scene, had to marry each other. And it was like a slight paranormal tinge to it. And it's like, anyway, going forward, it didn't get picked up by the agent or Random House, and I self-published. And so now I'm on book 11. And the problem with that is each book is not, is it, while it's standalone, there is a certain element within that book where they need to all be together to be stronger. Now, that is a lot of characters to drag through each book. So basically in the last book of that, there's book 11, I've got 22 characters
to fit into those pages,
you know, that you need to keep chucking in. And on top of that, there's kids and there's, like, you know, babies and, you know, like,
that are growing up.
Yeah, you know, and I'm and then to top all that, on top of that is they have to marry each other, so I had to find blood relations that just appeared that couldn't be illegitimate children constantly, and, you know, random, you know. So don't look, warning, okay, take it from me, this is my absolute best-selling series and people absolutely love it. It is the hardest thing I've ever had to write in my life. Honestly.
Because of those rules that you set up right at the beginning.
Who does that? You know?
Well,
you thought it was going to be three books.
I did, you know, and so I'm writing, I'm not going to say it out loud, but I'm writing the last book at the moment, and I'm just like,
bring it on.
Gosh sake, there's 22 characters in this scene, you know, like, I mean.
What's ironic is probably your readers love it that you bring
them
22.
They love it.
They love having all
these characters. You try and squeeze 22 people into a bedroom, you know, like, and while they're trying to save someone who's dying on a bed.
That sounds like a different book.
No, like a reverse harem type thing. Yeah. But no, you know, like, one, all like of the orgy. People who are one family have to be in the front, and they have to be connected by holding each other and, you know, like a hand or whatever, and their partners have to be behind them for power. And And it's like, and then there's the new generation coming through, and I hate them all.
but everybody's going out to buy the book now.
No, but what I'm trying to say is I'm not a plotter, but this next series that will lead on from there will be at least worked through, and the magic side of things will be sorted, because while it's fun, you still want to enjoy writing the book, but
pulling teeth.
Oh my Lord. And it's like my daughter who reads all my books, she's like, Mummy, you haven't got so-and-so in this book. And I'm like, oh my God, where am I going to get that one in? You know, like, it's crazy. Yeah.
And I think,
oh my gosh,
the writing of the magic, I remember Trudy and I reading a book many years ago, and it was on writing paranormal, and it was about the rules of creating magic, and for the kind of the benefits, you had to have the payoff, if you like. And this kind of falls into that territory, doesn't it? About setting the rules up for the strength of that magicness by having to have all the people there. If you had have just made it that you only had to have, say, three, then it would have,
one.
You know, it's
they could just have like a magic crystal that amplifies their power and they discover
it. No, they could have anything, Trudy. Let's be honest.
And not forgetting that these are also romances. So you have to have that thread for a start.
I went back and was reading book three the other day, and I was like, This was so lovely.
Remember the day? Remember back in the days where there only needed to be three couples?
Yeah, you know. And you know, the thing about it, a series like that is you want to do justice to the other characters, right? Yes. So they, you know, I firmly believe that, you know, I like the first two senior members of the family to be the ones that come right through as the boss dogs. But in this situation, they're all boss dogs, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, tricky. Don't do it.
Trixie, don't do it.
Do not do it, people. Do not do it.
So the lining is that people love all the characters and it's your best-selling character, yeah. best-selling series. Yeah. So, you know.
There is
someone said to me the other day, do you think you could write a series going forward in the future with all the children? And I just said no.
Yeah.
You give yourself a couple of years, you might go back to
them. But no, you could write a particular branch of the family, just a set of, you know, just
that'd be a no. Yeah, okay. They're done.
I think it's
now we've
to
got
say,
this recorded, and she's going to be like, and we're going to play it back to her in like 2 years, and she's going, oh, well, I clearly didn't understand at the time.
No, I understand.
I realised about it.
When she's on to Sinclair and Raven season 3, the new generation.
Not that many people in the world want
the Netflix series.
What about you, Shah, moving away from Sinclair?
So just thinking of that, so I've, back in the day, so there's only a certain subset of Alice's that will remember the heady days of KU1. And if you know, you know, just saying. Yeah. I'm not going to talk about it for those that weren't there because they were heady days and they were beautiful days and they were the days that we could put up tiny, tiny little novellas and earn a really nice income. I had two occasions where I were writing shifters and the shifters literally changed shifters in the middle of a story from they started off as bears and then they turned into wolves. And So that was that. And then there was another one and, oh, man, there's so many mistakes. And also just publishing something with a cliffhanger and never, ever publishing the next part. So all of these are in the pen names. All of these were taken down. just, you name it, I did it. But that's the beauty of pen names, just saying. And it was the beauty of those heady days as well, where it was the Wild West and we loved it. In terms of mistake, what did I learn from it? I learned that everything is recoverable and that a pen name, you can just, you actually can take things down and unpublish things as well, which is fantastic. and so, yeah, that's what I learned from that, I guess. There's no such thing as irreversible. And the other thing I learned, the other mistakes that I've made, just moving off the writing thing, but it's something I'm pretty sure we've all done, and that is like sending out newsletters without the live links or the wrong links and that kind of thing. Or if you are running lots of pen names, sending out a newsletter for a particular pen name but linking to a different pen name that isn't sexy, were bears turning into werewolves with no rational explanation. To a different list. Yeah. So,
Have you done that?
Oh, possibly. You know,
it's
really easy to do that. So if you are doing two completely separate pen names, I would recommend using a different browser. So you have, for example, you know, Google for one and Safari for the other and whatever the Twitch
meant.
Or I've also heard people that literally have two different laptops or computers. If they are so radical, like if you're writing inspirational Amish on one pen and you're writing, you know, the Tour Menage,
it's a really good idea to have different colors and also a different picture of you if you're using your own picture,
and also a different, if you're doing two radically different newsletters, a different newsletter provider as well, I think that, because it's so easy.
That's pretty drastic though, right?
Yeah,
it is, but you know,
it costs you.
If you are doing your inspirational Amish, you know, they're not going to want to see minotaurs getting milked, you know, on their in the newsletter. I'm just saying.
Right. Necessarily. Okay. Probably trying to move on from that.
Different
one,
kind of.
So, if that happens, because we're kind of talking about these mistakes, and I'm just curious, like I think the Goodreads giveaways one's fairly recent for you, is it, Shea? How do we talk about
my last release about 3 or 4 months ago? Pardon?
Okay, so it's not too bad. I just want to talk about how do you kind of move on from the mistakes without
easier
to sit there and blaming or shaming yourself for hours.
I think you've got to give yourself a little bit of time to say all the bad words.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe hit something.
And to feel the feelings, you know, how you get that hot feeling, that hot, sweaty feeling where you know, you know, that
you're human. You don't go, Nobody does that.
I will learn from this. This will be a learning exercise. No, not at the time. Not at the time of realization. No,
but soon. But actually, I think even if you're feeling rubbish, I think you still have to get on and make it right to the best of your ability, like soon, like days later.
I think action propels you out of that.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Doing something always makes you feel better, even though you may hate what you're doing while you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to fix the situation, mitigate the problem.
Yeah,
and I mean, eventually you will laugh about it, you know.
Well, I am now, but it's not a laughter from deep within me.
Not a belly laugh. No.
It's like, what were you thinking?
Yeah. I uploaded the wrong file to a book.
And I can only imagine with so many books that it would be super easy to do. Like whether it's a different story or it's a different version of the edited, you know.
No, just a different story.
Well, so tell us how
whenever you're loading new links, which you have to do all the time, because every time you put a new book out, you want the other books to reflect that link so that wherever they pick up your stories, they can actually move on to any of those books, whether they're standalone or in a series, because some just might appeal to them, or the name or the cover or whatever. So every time you go in, there is always that chance that if the last thing you were looking at was not that book but something else on your laptop, to load that book. And I can see how it would happen. But here's a little tip. Every time you click load file, just scroll back up to the top of the page and it will have the name of the book that you should be loading. And the file should have the name of the book that you have loaded. And if they're different, there you go.
Don't go yet. No, where were you when I needed you then?
Look, I just do that as a matter of course, and actually I think it was because either you or Trudy had done it. And I was like,
So there's another benefit. Learn from others.
Exactly. Luckily for me, my cousin who reads my stuff, she said to me, I don't think that's the book that's meant to be with that title, mate. I'm like, really? She's like, you might want to check that. So I checked it and it was wrong.
You're making me want to go back and check all my books now.
I know.
I think you would have heard by now. Yeah. Somebody would have said anything.
And apparently you guys say that I did it too. And
you don't do it.
Blocked
you
did. Blocked it from my memory. That's how I deal with mistakes.
I was going to say block it.
I'm terrible for this because I have a real right versus wrong dichotomy going on, and I'm working on it, and I do try not to do it as much as I used to, but in the past I would have been like, oh my god, I did it wrong,
and it would
have just been a big drama for me, like I wouldn't have been able to cope with it, or I would have just been shaming myself. This is why I keep talking about the shame and blame, because that's exactly what I have always done. When I make a mistake, I make myself feel bad because
you're so stupid.
I do that. We all do that, dude. Yeah. I do that.
But I think now I'm trying to say, well, we all make mistakes, right? Like this is just we do our best. We try to not make mistakes. We double check and do all the things that we possibly can. But sometimes we're tired. Sometimes things happen. And it doesn't, you know, we're not brain surgeons. I mean, I think brain surgeons probably want to get it right every single time.
You know, you'd hope so, though.
But I'd also,
the table. They probably don't, though.
Also like to point out, though, as self-publishers, you're running a publishing business and doing so many things, like so many, as you, I know I'm preaching to the converted here, but also, you know, just because, like, I just want to correct any myths that traditional publishing never make mistakes. They've got teams of people. They've got people that are involved in the production, people involved, like there's a whole, you know, it really is a village. And yet how many of us have got books that have had like a chapter left out or it's been printed upside down. There's all kinds of things.
My first trade pub and only trade pub, I reread the other day and I'm just like, what was I thinking writing this, firstly? And secondly, the mistakes in that book and they had used their editors that I can't now touch and move away from, you know, like it's actually quite horrifying.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think absolutely everybody should give themselves a lot of grace as a self-publisher, because you're doing so much. Mm. And yeah, mm. just saying.
But when you get like back to what Trudy was saying about, you know, how she would react to that,
yeah.
I think it is actually important, like I said, to have that moment where you're like, oh my
yeah.
God. But also not to be berating yourself and like mm-hmm. all that negative self-talk yeah. that we use, that we've heard experts come on the program and talk to us about how not to do that. I think it's really important to start as quickly as you can to like not be saying how stupid you are,
yeah.
because that's the first thing that comes out of my mouth, you know, if I make a mistake.
I think stepping away, actually literally physically stepping away from the computer, because mm. sometimes sitting there staring at it, knowing, mm. you know, seeing that newsletter's gone out or seeing that book's been uploaded or whatever, mm. sometimes in the rush to fix, you can actually compound the error. This mm. is for me anyway. And so sometimes mm. it's better to just go for a walk for 30 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, unless it's something that you can fix right away. Yeah. Right, like I've had newsletter emails come out, and then like half an hour later or an hour later, I'll get a new one pop in and say, "Sorry, the link wasn't there," or something yeah. like that. I think if you can fix that, you should do that straight away.
Yeah, but again, just remember that the urgency is usually for your own self,
mm.
unless it's really time sensitive. I think. Yeah, just because a lot of people, it's okay to take a pause, because mm. I know myself when I'm panicked, I'm much more likely to mm. make even more mistakes.
That's actually a really good point, is actually that whole we get panicky and things become urgent when they're not actually. Like, mm. like mm. Cheryl, I don't know if you want to talk about, but when we were at coffee the other day and you had the thing for someone that you were trying to find, and you were trying to do it straight away and then realised
later. Oh, yeah, yeah. And actually all it would have taken was going back to the person that I was, she was doing me a favour and she was promoting one of my books and she needed a particular link because I have my own store now and it was a particular link for that, and I was doing a discount, couldn't figure out how to do it, finally got it, but she didn't have the link. I needed to get to her, didn't have any Wi-Fi. And so it was just compounding, couldn't get into treaties. It was seriously, I think I lost like about 3/4 of an hour, didn't I? It was mm. it was really frustrating. And for me, when I'm doing something for somebody, well, they're doing me a favour, that is so important to me. It's mm. my integrity. It's, you know, it's just, anyway, couldn't really cope with it. And all it actually took in the end was an email from my phone to say to her, look, I'm really sorry, I'll go straight home and blah, blah, blah. And she came back to me and she said, don't worry, I'm not going to do this till tonight.
Yeah.
Get exactly. my newsletter out till tonight.
Yeah. So all the drama and all that the drama. Worry.
Yeah.
Clarify.
Yeah.
Very good point, Trini. I didn't know you were going with that. I was a little bit frightened, but yes.
Sorry. That was the moment. But I think that's what we do, right? We make a mistake and then we panic and then we're so and it's not that you made a mistake, Cheryl, but it was just that energy of it at the moment. Yes. You wanted to make it happen right away and we couldn't get the computers to work and we couldn't do it. And it's the same when you realise you've done something wrong and you're trying to fix it in this panic mode when actually maybe if you just take a bit of a breath and just kind of go, okay, is this something that I need to do straight away? How do I need to fix it? Is this, you know, is this as big as I'm thinking it is? Because sometimes we're so hard on ourselves.
And it's also maybe exhausting. It is. Yeah. It's very. That's it. You're it's mentally and emotionally really.
And
tired.
Everything else is written off when you do that too. Like if you're busy that day, and you've got a whole lot of other stuff to do. Yeah. You're like, well, I don't know what you guys are like. Like I know. Taking a break is a good thing, but for me, if I make a mistake, it needs to be dealt with. I have to deal with it, or I actually can't function.
Yeah,
that's just me personally. Yeah. I just like it's I've got to deal with it. I've got to deal with it. Deal with it right now, or my life is over.
That wouldn't be stressful living with that at all.
No, gosh, no. Yeah, no. You want to be in my head, mate. You know, like if something needs doing, I'm one of those people that if I've got 7 things to do and I hate 2 of them, those got to be done first.
Again, I think that's a very, very good plan, actually.
It is. It's not a plan. It's just the way it has to be. Otherwise, I just go, there's that little voice in my head the whole time. And nothing else works until it's done, you know?
Yeah.
And I do think because there's this temptation to sort of bury your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you make a mistake and you go, oh, no, this is a disaster, what am I going to do? And it's kind of like, I know, I'll pull the blanket over my head and not worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's this, it might not always be the easiest thing to do, but maybe just standing up and kind of going, okay, yeah, owning the mistake. Yes, yeah. I made a mistake. I didn't do it on purpose. What can I do to fix it? And doing your best to fix it and make it sorted out is actually going to gather you more respect and you'll get more from it than if you just bury your head and try and pretend it's not there.
It's the two extremes, isn't it? One is denying it ever happened. The other one is completely overdoing it and shaming yourself. Like, it's kind of like you want to kind of be in the middle, really, don't you?
And often if you avoid, and delay or whatever, or put off and think it's not an issue, and it comes back and bites you in the butt, man. Yeah. You know, like, and how many times have you turned around and gone, you know, if I'd have dealt with that then, when it very first happened, it wouldn't have manifested. It wouldn't have become the big horror show it has. Yeah. And now, you know,
made it worse.
It's that whole cowardly side of things, isn't it? For me, it's like, I hate confrontation. I hate, I avoid stuff. So I avoid, but you've got to deal with.
And I think that also, if you draw from your experience from actually going out physically to work, that is what you would do in a 9-to-5 job. Yeah. You have something crops up in your day, you have to deal with it. Yeah. You have to deal with it in a timely manner. And I think that's part of what our business is actually doing that, you know.
Mm. Owning it.
The disclaimer I would make to that, because that's just me, it's not even a disclaimer, it's a rider to that, and I don't really want to get into this now, but it's if something happens on social media, a drama happens that you're either dragged into or you're the subject of, I think knee-jerk reactions are never great. Often that's when things go
that's
wrong.
A whole nother ball game.
Which is a whole nother ball game.
That's not really your business as far as I'm concerned.
From a PR angle, it's always good to take a breath. It never works out well.
Good point.
To bite back.
Anything that affects your business, you take a breath and make sure you take the right
action. That's a slightly different thing, right? Yeah. Like, this is not.
It is. No, I'm not talking, but I'm just saying, I think the mistake in that case is knee-jerk reaction.
And sometimes you can ignore that. You might not want to, but sometimes you have to.
Walk away.
We've all written that email, or even when somebody says something stupid online and it triggers something in you and you want to write something really snarky back. I think we've all had that one.
I used to do this really bad habit, and it could have gone horribly wrong, where I had clients I was working for, and they were kind of annoying on many, many levels, and I'd write and they'd come back to me and say, oh, can you do this thing? And they'd be like, and I'd reply with the email I really wanted to send, like, well, that's not possible because that's an idiotic idea, and I think you just need to settle back and let the professionals do their freaking jobs. And then I took a breath, and then I rewrote it how I needed to write it, and was like, of course we can, let's figure out how we can make this work. And they loved me and I thought it was awesome. But could you imagine if
I did this? No, I did. I sent the bad email.
That's right. I remember you saying that, and you had to run around and delete it.
Well, there was this person in my office who could just look at me, and I'd want to kill him. You know, like, he was one of those guys who'd walk into the room breathing, and I really just wanted to, like, get out of my face. You know, like, because you have those people, right?
Man,
he was one of them. And anyway, he sent me this email that was the most stupid thing I've ever read in my entire life. So I blasted back to my friend who sits across from me, but sent it to him. So I walked calmly down the office, and I went up to his computer, and I said, dude, just move out. I've got an issue with computers at the moment. I'm not quite sure what's happening with your emails. I'm not getting them, da-da-da-da-da. So I just got in there, boop, boop, deleted. He loves me. We're all good. But there was that moment of absolute fear that I
sweat.
Had just of him, like, I just absolutely destroyed him. My friend at the meantime was under the desk hysterical, you know.
It takes some balls, man. I'm not sure I can actually go.
Lessons in life, right? That was a lesson for me. That was 100% a lesson to make sure that your recipient on your return email is the one you wanted.
Well,
I just
think you should probably not be saying mean things about people.
Oh, come on.
Email.
We're all human. We've all done it.
No, I know, but it's such a terrible idea, and you hear so many stories about people.
I've done it.
I mean, that was
trouble.
A get out of jail free card, and I doubt I would then ever do it again. I mean, that taught me a lesson, and I was doubly nice to him after that because I felt so bad, even though he didn't know what day it was. You know, like, so. But what I'm saying is, lessons, man.
I remember the day again. back in the day of those newsletter lists, remember? Yeah. And it would be like a kind of, and you'd get like a digest.
Yeah, 15 of them, yeah.
And oh man, this.
Yeah. Anyway, we shouldn't. We shouldn't.
Anyhow,
we won't do that sort of thing.
Don't hit reply all.
No. Don't hit reply all.
Love everyone.
Don't reply with mean stuff.
Yeah. It wasn't mean as such. It was a little bit belittling, perhaps. Yeah. But yeah. To his brain
capacity. No, I'm just talking generally. Mm. Like, don't be
mean. Mean is not cool. Mean is not cool.
And
look good on anyone's page.
Bringing it into today's thing, I think the same thing on social media. Yes. Be real careful what you post in there and in groups, because nothing is sacred. Nothing is sacred. Yeah.
So yeah, and I also, just bringing it back to writing and craft and that, as I was like, I think it's really important to know you. Know thyself. Mm. And where I'm going with this is, I've plotted one book in my lifetime with Trudy. She made me.
Do you notice how she says that with blame?
Yeah.
I
just want to say, mistakes we've made plotting this book, I never wrote it. So
well, I bet it was a fun time, though.
I would like to conjecture or put a conjecture out there that was not a mistake then, because you learnt your process.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was part of your learning.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Maybe.
I mean, that's the thing they say, right? Although they do say, like, imagine if you never make mistakes or you never fail at anything.
Oh, wow. You never learn.
You never get anywhere, because you're sitting in your nice, comfortable little box doing your nice, comfortable little things, and, I don't know, die early because your life is so boring. Like, you need to get out there and make mistakes. And
mistakes will make you live longer.
Yes. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it, and you will never make me disagree.
Fail upwards, as they say on
fail fast, fail upwards.
So, let's talk about some marketing mistakes. So we've covered kind of newsletter and that kind of thing. What about, is there any marketing mistakes that you guys have done? Well, there's
the old forgetting to put your book down when you've got a promotion on, or my favourite, not checking your KU time frame. When you book something like a free booksy or a bargain booksy or something, and then realize you can't actually put it to the price that you've put it at because of the date that the end of the 3 month is on, and you can't. So if you're near the end of that, won't let you straddle, and it won't let you book until after that date. So you have to kind of wait, and then I've had that happen.
Yeah,
I think you've had it too, Shea. Yeah,
just recently, actually.
Just check your dates. Checking at you when the end date is of that.
You book the promotion.
But I'd like to put a vote in for check your decimal points too when you're bidding on cost per click ads on Facebook, and you want to bid. I don't know, say 50 cents and it's $5. Like $5 instead. And then you think, man, this ad is going so well. It's already like within 2 minutes, it's come up with a little notification that you've used the budget up. And I'm thinking, I nailed that audience, man. Boy, did I nail that audience.
Nope.
It must have reached like several thousand by now. So then you click in the ad and you realize that you spent $5 a click on the ad, and it's seen two people, and it's like, The other one I'd say is not setting is, I mean, there's so much with Facebook advertising, so much. Same thing for Amazon ads. It's really easy to overbid on that as well. You know, it's just checking
don't
the decimal
rush
point.
When you're doing ads.
I have a kind of a numbers blindness as well, or not officially, but just they scare me, so I don't look and I close my eyes when I'm doing things. And
So anyone who's thinking of hiring Shah to do any numbers for them might
want to. Ironically, when I'm spending other people's money, I am anal about checking it, but it's when it's mine, it's like, it's not quite so bad. And I can understand why my credit card was suddenly maxed out. I was running Spargirls ads for our back in the day live workshops, and it was like I was spending $5.
But that'll suck money up.
Boy, did it what? Just saying, check decimal points.
And actually, that's a good point. If you are running ads, you should be checking, I think, at least once a day to make sure that you're not overspending if you have no budget.
Yeah.
You know, like
totally.
Amazon ads that are just never ending. Yeah.
I think it's important to say the only real mistake is the one from which we learn nothing. John Powell.
You're so deep.
I was going to say, was that a Wendy Valla saying?
No, John Powell.
She made that up herself.
With John Powell.
Just whip that sucker out.
Yeah.
Okay, no. Very good.
And I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for laying your mistakes out in front of all the listeners.
Open books.
And I think anybody that says they haven't made mistakes, I would question the premise on that.
They're the people living in the box that are living the boring life that are not doing anything.
Oh, that are dying soon.
Or they're in total denial. Or they're fibbing.
I think we should leave now because it's really deteriorating.
To say one of the biggest mistakes our listeners can make is not subscribing to the podcast not subscribing to our YouTube channel, because believe me, you will see the facial expressions, you'll see the hand horror, signals, the horror,
the waving,
the sometimes dumbstruck look on our guest faces when they're trying to work out we would absolutely love it if you guys would give us a subscribe
and come and see us at bargirls.com.
yeah, and thank you to those that do.
We love you.
Awesome. All right, on that note, I just want to say thank you to everyone listening to the Spa Girls podcast. That's enough from us
today. And thank you to our Patreon peeps.
Oh, yes, thank you to our Patreon peeps. We'll be back again next week, same time, around the same place, I don't know. But for now, farewell.
Keep well.
Bye.